Thank you. So, yeah, so that's the first real blackboard talk, even though Tuka came close with the slides that looked like a blackboard. All right, so, and also I discussed yesterday with Mark, who said that he liked the slow rhythm of blackboard talk, so let's do that. So I want to talk about denoising simple tensors. It's things you have probably, some of you have already understood, but since it's not slide, let me write the archive number of these papers. So the most recent, I'm not an author, it's by Okosh Jagannath, who is here, Lopato and Leo Miolan. I don't know the first, I forgot the first name of Lopato, you may remember. Patrick, yeah. So, and so it's archive, it's in December. And the other works are with Okosh too and Reza, who is here. Reza Geysagi, and these guys. And there is an earlier work with Valentina Ross, Giulio, and Chiara, which is this number. And an even earlier one with Song Mei, who's here, Andrea and Mihai Nika, and that's the number. And an even earlier one with Okosh, which is this one. All right, so the really relevant one here are this and that. Okay, so the story here is very simple. Let's start with I want to take one example of a statistical problem, and we've heard, there are many stories about these things. First, why is it hard to solve it? And we've heard some problems that were hard, but not too hard, like the 2 plus k model. And if you remember what Lenka said, she said, I want something which is hard, but not in the class of tensors. And we've heard, of course, how it's difficult or not to escape local, I mean, critical points, saddle point, local minima. Yesterday we heard an interesting story by Yuxin Chen about why in the end you don't care about local minima because you don't see them. Right? You don't care about the critical points. So I want to explain all the, I mean, to look at all these questions on a very simple problem. So the very simple statistical problem, which in fact ends up being hard, is denoising a tensor. So the simplest problem of statistics, the one with this PCA, I mean, is you give yourself a vector, you know, it's, you take a noisy version of it, and you want to recover the vector. That's not too hard. The next thing is you give yourself, let's say, you could look at a matrix, but let's take in general a tensor. So you have an unknown tensor, let's say a K tensor, and it's noisy, right? So instead of observing it, you observe maybe a certain number of instances of this with, let's say, even the simplest case, which is a Gaussian noise, right? And then you want to recover the tensor. So of course, if the tensor itself is really complicated, it's hard. But let's take the simplest of all possible simple problem, which is let's take a rank 1 tensor. So the unknown tensor that you're trying to look at, I mean, you could take rank 17, but let's take rank 1. Not diverging with the dimension. So you take a rank 1 tensor and you observe a noisy version of that, or maybe a certain number of noisy versions of that, and you want to recover the tensor. So the model is very simple. You have, let's say, YL. L is between 1 and M. That's my my sample. And this is a tensor, a rank 1 tensor, so certain vector v. And I will just assume that v is in dimension n. So it's a unit vector, this is the sphere with radius 1. And this is observed, but with a noisy observation, WL, let's say. So, and here, of course, I need to put a signal-to-noise ratio that will be a constant lambda, okay? And for, you know, practical reason, let's say this is a normalization chosen here, okay? K is, the, this is a K tensor. Right? A P tensor if you want a P spin, but it will be a K tensor here. All right? So this guy W is a collection of W, I1, IK, right? Which are all, let's say, standard Gaussian. Right? So I could, of course, change the variance here, but I did the same by putting the signal-to-noise ratio there. All right, so this is what you observe, and you have, of course, naturally two statistical problems here. One, the first one is, so of course, this is called spike tensors or tensor PCA. And the first question, of course, is, let's say, hypothesis testing. So call, I don't know, P lambda, the law of this.
So do you want root n, or do you want, like, n to the, like, k over 2 or something? And there's no...
You will see. For the moment, lambda is whatever you want, so this is chosen to help in the discussion, all right? So if you look at the distribution of this guy with a spike and the one without a spike, so can these two guys, can these two distributions be distinguished? Right. So that's question about hypothesis testing. So you take any kind of decent distance between distribution, let's say total variation, for instance, and can you look at this? And is this thing positive or zero? Right? Of course, there's a huge literature on that. I'm not inventing this problem. And in our community, maybe one of the oldest paper goes back to Andrea Reichman and Zaytouni, yeah, probably. And there are lots of literatures on by Alfonso Bandera, Perry, and Wine, and more. So the first question is information theoretic. So that's the information theory means hypothesis testing, in fact, for statisticians. So the question is, can you really distinguish between these two things? Right? Super powerful. You don't wonder about algorithmics. You just wonder whether these two distributions are seriously different, right, or not. If they are not, then you cannot do anything, right? Yeah, n will be large, of course, here. All right, so.
So, John, can you remind us or explain to us what the definition of the total variance?
It's essentially the maximum of the difference of the two probability taken on reasonable events. Okay, so that's. But you could take, I mean, this is total variation. You could take other definition of distances. Essentially, the threshold would be the same thing. So, the first. So this means if this distance is not zero, there is an event or a function which will distinguish between the two things. And as a statistician, you want to find this event or this estimator. All right, so the question, the first threshold is that with this normalization, so let me take here, okay, this was just temporary. It's very easy to see that because everything is Gaussian, I could as well assume that there is only one observation. Right? So let's take m equal 1 for the moment. Of course, because if m is not 1, you just change lambda to lambda times square with m, and you have the same problem, essentially. So this was just to present it as a statistics problem. In fact, here I present it as you have one instance, and you try to find the spike. All right, so the result here that there is, so what can we expect? The first thing maybe in order to understand what we can expect is, take the case where what I call K is 2. Right? So now instead of having tensors, you have matrices. So that's, of course, a very well-known thing. That's, we've heard a lot about it. That's the famous BBP transition. Right? Yeah, let's take it if symmetric if you want. Here, that would make a difference. Okay? So then here, you would have, let's say, a Wigner matrix, and you add a rank 1 perturbation. So with the normalization that are here, you know that there is a critical lambda such that when lambda is smaller than this lambda critical, the BBP thing, then in fact, this distance goes to zero. So you can distinguish anything, and then when lambda is larger, you can. And in fact, but you cannot recover completely the spike. It's easy to see. So what would you do? Let's forget the information theory part. Let's do it statistically. If you have a matrix plus a rank one perturbation, here, of course, it's very clear that what you want to do is look at the top eigenvector of this matrix, right? If it gets out of this, or the bottom one. But so here, let's look at the top one. And the BBP transition says that when lambda is larger than the constant, the eigenvalue will get out of the bulk, and the top eigenvector will begin to correlate with the spike. Not be exactly it. If you let the lambda in this scale go to infinity, it will go exactly to the spike. All right? So this is an easy thing. This is linear algebra. But when you do tensors, it might be a little more complicated. So What? Or maybe that. Yeah. Come on. All right. So now, if you take a K which is larger than 3, what can you say? A real tensor problem. So, what is known, in fact, from these results by Afonso Bandeira and others, is that there is a threshold indeed here, which is the same phenomenon. So this is the IT threshold, formation theory threshold, where you have the same thing, where when lambda is smaller than lambda c, the two distributions are contiguous. You don't see any difference. And so forget it. And when lambda is larger than lambda c, the two distributions are, in fact, different. The distance, when n is large, this distance is positive. So this means that when you're above lambda c, for a fixed, here lambda is a fixed number, if you're God, there is a statistical procedure that you know that will allow you to distinguish the two things, right? So the next thing is, once you're above this lambda c, is to go into statistics. That was information theory. So then you have a statistical threshold, of course, which can depend on the statistical procedure that you choose to distinguish, which means, to come back to the total variation, depends on the event you want to choose to distinguish those two things. So here, let's look at the MLE, which is the only thing I know in statistics. So the maximum likelihood. So if you do maximum likelihood for this, you see that, of course, the only thing you have to do is maximize. Of course, we will just minimize by changing the sign, because we want to have something reasonable. So I don't want to put the... So you maximize this the following function, let's say L is 1, times an x to the k, in x, of course, on the sphere. Okay, that's what it is. Of course, change the sign, and this will become the min, if you want. But when you look at what that is, of course, it's obvious. This function here is just up to normalization, the term W in a product with XK is a K-spin model. Right? Spherical. Oh, I didn't say anything. The important thing here, my X is, of course, on the sphere, so I'm only in the spherical context. Okay, so if you take this thing in a product with X to the K, you get sum of WI1 IK, XI1 XIK, and that's the K-spin model. It's a K-spin model here. The normalization it's not on the usual sphere of radius squared with n. That's why all these normalizations are a little different. And then you add to this lambda squared with n times x in a product with v to the k. Right? V is the spike, which you don't know. So look at what we have to do here. Of course, change, you can change the max to a min, obviously, if you want here. So what do we have? We have to find the max of a function, which we know well. This is the K-spin model, spherical. And here, so this is, from the point of view of a mathematician, this is just a random polynomial of degree K. And we know that such random polynomial, of course, polynomials are complex. And this is also a polynomial of degree K. Of course, by symmetry here, you could very well choose, you can decide to choose V to be, let's say, E1, one vector, right? Let's say the north pole of your sphere. So this is a very simple polynomial. This is just X1 to the K, right? And this is a very simple polynomial too. It's sum of Wi1ik, Xi1, Xik. Okay, with a constant. All right, so these two functions are extremely simple functions for a mathematician. One is, both are polynomial of degree K, homogeneous polynomial of degree K. This one is generic, random. This one is very specific. All right? Now let's talk just 1 minute about another thing that has come a lot, which is in machine learning, things are different because in fact you have plenty of flat directions. Of course, this term is extremely flat, right? When you put yourself at the equator where x1 equals 0, this one is very flat. If you remember, k is larger than 3, right? So this one has only one direction in which the Hessian is not flat. Everything else is totally flat at the equator, right? So this will be a picture that will come back a lot. So this is the sphere in dimension n. This is my axis e1, so that's my my spike. All right, and so the function here, what I'm saying, the second part, the signal part, is a function just of this coordinate. And of course, on this part here, which is of dimension n minus 2, it's extremely flat. All right? Of course, this one is not flat. This one, as we've just heard many times, this kind of complicated structure. So the question is, now if you do MLE, not even algorithmically, just statistically, can you say that this maximum correlates with the spike? Right? Again, if you do that when k equals 2, what you're doing here is just finding the top eigenvector of a matrix. And what you know is that it will correlate, not exactly, but it will correlate when lambda goes to infinity. Right? So here you have the same question. And then the next question, so you have a statistical threshold, we could call it lambda stat if you want, MLE, whatever. Is there a threshold above which you know that this maximum will be correlated with a signal, or below which you don't? It stays on the equator. So that's the next question. In this context, this last paper, I start with the paper on the top of the this thing here, the paper by Okosh and Leo and Patrick, prove that in fact this is the same. Right? So that's a very recent result. And it says what? It says that as soon as you're above the threshold where something is possible, when you can try to correlate with the spike, MLE does it, right? So
is it there's basically unique maximum here?
Wait. This will come. The answer is no. I will talk about minima. You will allow me to switch to minima because but yeah. So the answer is no in this regime when lambda is fixed. But anyway, the threshold, but here we are not trying to find, I'm not saying the threshold is not the threshold above which you recover the spike fully, it's just the threshold above which you have weak recovery of the spike. That is, you find something which is correlated with the spike, better than random, okay? Of course, in a sphere in very high dimension, if you take a vector at random, it's on the equator. Right? It's on a little band of 1/√n around the equator. And so, by the way, this picture of a sphere is ridiculous in high dimension, of course. The way you should think of a sphere is in high dimension is a very, very big space, completely flat, with two tiny holes. And the two tiny holes are the hemispheres, right? And certainly not, because when you see that, the hemisphere take all the room here. But in fact, they are not there. It's hard to find them.
Perhaps it's worth saying that when the total variation goes to zero, then there is a very, you know, quite explicit test that you can, that is the likelihood ratio test that achieves it. So you can just compute the likelihood ratio test and you don't have to compute the MLE. Both cannot be computed.
But here it's remarkable that the MLE does the best you can do. Okay, I'm not saying it's the only one, and I'm not even saying that it does the best. It says here you weakly recover. Maybe there are other procedures that recover better than the MLE, but at least the MLE puts your estimation of the spike somewhere in the right hemisphere, which is already not too bad. Okay, so that's the first result. There's much more to read in this paper, but that's the first thing. And then, because a priori you have three thresholds, and then there is another threshold, let's say the algorithmic threshold. So now we've chosen the statistical procedure, the MLE, so we have to choose an algorithm to try to find this maximum or minimum. And depending on the algorithm, what is this? What is the threshold above which you're sure to correlate, right? And the picture is that this threshold, in fact, will diverge as a power of n, whatever you do, right? And we'll see what alpha would be. So this depends on the algorithm, but I will discuss that. So this is what Lenka was trying to avoid when she said, I want to model the model 2 plus k, where you don't have this thing where the threshold above which something nice happens, and answers your question too, the threshold above which the algorithm works is in fact much, much higher than the one where you can do something.
Alpha times lambda IT?
I'm sorry?
Do you want n the alpha times lambda IT? Or
this is a constant.
Okay.
It's 2. Right? So I don't, when I say that, I mean I don't care about constant. So I will, so the only one, okay, let me, so, okay, let's go into that. So there are plenty of algorithms that have been looked at, and of course, approximate message passing, for which you have a certain alpha, I can say what that is, tensor power iteration, and here I will look at the what we had yesterday, that is, I believe in the simplest possible algorithm, gradient descent or even Langevin dynamics. And of course, there the question of initialization is important. So let's say here what we'll prove is, let's say Langevin dynamics or gradient descent started from good initial conditions, but of course, let's say random, for instance, we have results for that, random initialization or others, of course, not from a warm start. If you start from an initialization here, the gradient descent will go fast. Okay, so that's cheating. Right? You want to start from, you don't want to have this information. All right, so what are the so let's look at this. Now, this is the subject of the talk, really, what the algorithms do. But before that, of course, I need to answer the question about, is there only one local minimum and so on? So the first question is, of course, the complexity of the landscape. That's the title of the conference, it's landscape. This is treated in these two papers. And so the answer is clear. If you take lambda equals zero, the landscape for the MLE problem here is just a K-spin model. So for that we know well the model is complex. Of course, it has been known in physics for a very long while. It was done in math precisely, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago with Tuka and Jerzy Czerny. And we understand pretty well, and then elaborated on by Subag. So what we did, what is easy to do mathematically is to compute the anneal complexity. In order to compute, and that's what we call the Katz-Rice formula. Interestingly, the Katz-Rice formula in the physics world has no name. It's just a trivial formula. So it doesn't
vary. It's the definition of delta function.
It's a definition of the delta function. Yeah. So, but exactly. So, so Jan has been working on the Katz-Rice formula for a long time. But so he calls it Katz-Rice. Everybody else in physics just doesn't call it. So the Katz-Rice formula gives us, of course, a dictionary between the understanding the complexity and understanding and a random matrix problem. In these problems here, which have this invariance by rotation, that's what they are. They are. The matrix, random matrix problem is the GOE, so that's simple. So in this case, we know that the problem is very complex. Of course, and so, but now when lambda is positive, this is what is studied here and there. In the rigorous, in this one, the annealed picture is given, and we don't do the quench. Quench is much harder mathematically. In this paper, the quench picture is given, but was less. I mean, it's my first paper where the proof is not a proof. I feel very guilty, as you can feel. But it's clearly now I know what physicists mean when they say it's exact.
So it's better than the
proof. Sure. So yeah. So what is the picture that emerges? It's the following. You have this transition. When lambda is smaller than a certain lambda 1, right? With this unit, this is a fixed number, not diverging with n. All your critical points are essentially at the equator. You have an exponentially large number of them. It's like the pure p-spin model. And you have very many of them, and they are here. When lambda is above, then you have, in fact, a band appearing here where, so this is the North Pole, remember, and where, in fact, the here you don't have an exponential number. Here the complexity just vanishes. Okay, so it's hard to know, in fact, here that there are indeed even maybe a large number of critical points. Okay, and when lambda is larger than something, so you have a first threshold where you see that, lots of critical points here, but the global minimum is still here, and after a while, you still have this, and the global minimum is there, right? So this is deeper than this, and then when lambda goes to infinity, this thing becomes tiny. This thing restricts there. You don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
You have sub-exponential. The complexity is zero. No, no, the p-spin doesn't put anything up there. The p-spin puts everybody here. Ah, no, this one, of course. You always keep an exponentially large number of local minima here. The landscape is terrible here. But here you don't really know. No, you're right. So in this phase now, when you are here, when lambda is very large, then here you have only one.
And nothing in between.
What? And nothing in between. You still have many here.
Wait, you still have, like, even there, you have many local.
Of course,
there.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Put X orthogonal to V. Then it's a pure p-spin.
Okay.
Of course you have plenty of.
No, they're only
as soon as you go off to the equator, yeah, but there you still.
Yeah, so the relevant thing is when the width of this band becomes smaller than one.
Yeah.
But then you don't wait. So because you don't get.
They're not open. No, you don't get. If x is order 100 n, so x sub v is small, then all the n is done.
So let me continue because I had a signal here, so which I could find. So this picture here, so we have a complicated picture. In fact, what these two articles tell us about the dynamics, so let's talk about, I'll say that in words now, when you look at Langevin dynamics, and let's do Langevin dynamics or gradient descent, starting from a typical point. A typical point is at a certain distance from the equator, rather close. And so the question is, will it find the North Pole or at least correlate with it? And in order to do that, you need lambda to be large, like a certain power that we can describe, precisely, We conjecture the optimal power. The power we obtain is better than the power proven in AMP or tensor product, etc. But the real, so let me just describe. No, the non-trivial power, I can tell you what it is. It's P minus 2 over 2 plus 1 6.
So for AMP or conjecture, it's P minus
2. The conjecture is the same, in fact, exactly the same. So I'm just talking about what is proven. Right. So what is proven now?
1 6 is like chasing
1 6? No. This 1 6 is just laziness on our side.
Oh, okay.
It's not Tracy Widom. Okay, so but let me finish. So now what is why, because that's the message. So how hard is it when you start from here to try to correlate there? Why do you need such a large lambda? So when you have a large lambda like this, you are in this situation where you have this circle up there is tiny, very close to the North Pole, and the landscape is very nice in between. So why is it so hard to get there? So, of course, here you have again, remember my picture. It's this flat landscape with plenty of rough landscape and this two tiny holes that you're trying to find, right? Now, the question is, are the critical points important, as we've heard, or are they not? The answer is they are not. In fact, of course, in finite time, in this order one time, the kind of time that we just heard in the former talk. Of course, if you consider very much longer time scale, they will be important. And for instance, the last paper here gives us a condition for this to happen. But in short time scale, in finite time scales, you don't see them. Not only do you not see them, even if you force the system. So that's a question that I never hear.
Which things are you not seeing?
All the critical points, no critical point, saddle point. Not only, and no local minima, no nothing.
So you're converging to finite time and you're going.
You don't converge to nothing, but you don't see critical points.
You see the ones in the equator.
I'm sorry?
You see the ones in the equator.
Not necessarily in short time. Here you have a, okay, so the question here is, so that's not what's happening. Even if you start close to a critical point, you will escape very quickly. Okay? So they are not the problem in these time scales. Once, if you have a warm start, if you manage to get to this height, going there is, in particular with this kind of lambda, is very quick. So that's not the problem. The real problem that is not mentioned here is the entropy at the equator and the weakness of the signal. The signal at the equator, the gradient of this guy, is very small. It's x^(k-1). So that's the real problem. That's what makes this problem much harder than the k equal 2 case. In this case, the signal at the equator, the thing that's supposed to drive you to the North Pole, is extremely small, and the entropy is very large. So what you tend to do is, if your lambda is not large enough, is to not escape the equator, and if you don't escape the equator, then you will begin to feel the roughness of the equator and get trapped there. And then the time, this is what we call refutation. If your lambda is not large enough, you spend at least a time which is a stressed exponential before you can escape the equator. Right? So correlate even very weakly with the signal. And if the signal is strong enough, then you can, at near the place of maximal entropy, which is the equator here, then you can escape. And once you've managed to escape a little bit, then you go fast. Okay, that's what gives us the optimal alpha. So at this point, the real question is, so we did that for Langevin, we did that for gradient descent. We keep hearing from, and here, of course, in this part of the dynamics, when you go around, you see plenty of flat directions, and they don't help. You could even do the following. You could kill all the roughness here, and it's not the roughness at the equator, even escaping purely the... A completely flat landscape at the equator is hard because of entropy if you have a very weak signal. So you can't. So the real problem now, one question that I have for people who know something about that, I'm not sure that's the right crowd, but it's, we hear so much about SGD being much better than gradient descent. In this context, I'm sure that SGD doesn't do anything better. It doesn't help you escape this. So here the real question is a question of initialization. Can you find something that pushes you away to a region where the signal is strong enough to carry you to the to this thing up there. All right, so this is a new problem. It's not escaping saddles. It's in fact a problem of having a very weak signal in most of the space. And again, if you see the picture of this, like I said, very flat thing with a tiny slope, you have these two holes, which are the hemisphere, and a very tiny slope going to it. That's the lambda. If the slope is too tiny, you just don't find them, just by entropy. It's the problem of the needle in a haystack, not a problem of anything else. You just don't find them. Once you begin finding them, you go down. So I spent years looking at complexity in this context, in this time scale, complexity is completely irrelevant, essentially. Complexity will play a role. So for instance, in a different model, which would be a P plus K, it could play a role if you had here, it could play a negative role. That is, it would give you a bound above which nothing can work. But to make this begin to work, you need to have a signal strong enough in the maximal entropy region to do something, to begin. And I don't believe that SGD does anything good. Maybe I'm wrong. But,
so, here. I mean, wouldn't you believe that
let's stay here.
So wouldn't you believe that some of these are computationally hard to get down to the information theoretic limit?
No, it is NP hard. It is not.
No, not NP hard.
Yeah, it is. It's, yes.
No, because NP hard is worst case statement.
Yeah, but so interestingly now, if you look at the worst case state, okay, work like an algebraic geometer instead of a random one, right? And you count, you try to understand the, you know, instead of taking a random W, you take the worst possible W. It's of the same order of complexity. The constants are just different.
So there wouldn't be this phase transition at k minus 2 over 4 if it was worst case.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So here, I mean, I agree completely with Amkur. It's not worst case complexity.
That's not what I'm saying here. There is a threshold. So what we conjecture that we prove for a certain alpha, we conjecture the right alpha. I mean, what should be the right alpha for Langevin dynamics or gradient? And in fact, it's the same for AMP. It's k minus 2 over 4. So I agree with you. When k is larger than 3, then you expect it to not work. I'm saying the origin of the problem is the entropy around the equator and the weakness of the signal.
So the conjecture that this is a k minus 2 over 2, not 4, this was made in the paper by myself and Miller Shard in 2015, something like this. And we analyzed the AMP and you know, I stated an open problem yesterday related to this. But the question is, the real gap is between k minus 2 over 4 and order 1, right? Order 1 and k minus 2 over 4.
Yes.
So probably you need to start with something else and a gradient descent or SGD or whatever in order to begin to find one of these things, and then it's easy.
But that's also why 2 days ago I kind of discarded this model because of this pathology that both AMP and Langevin and gradient descent are actually far away from the optimal algorithms.
But I'm saying that this pathology is not really a pathology, just this phenomenon here. Yeah.
Right.
So here, for instance, if you take this problem, and you take a k-spin, a p-spin, you put this k different from that k, right, which does not correspond to an inference problem, but an interesting optimization problem. You take a random p polynomial and you add this x1 to the k, then the picture of complexity becomes more interesting. This is, we call that the p plus k model. This is what we work with in this paper with Giulio, Valentina, Chiara. I'm sorry, Valentina, Chiara, and Giulio. And the complexity becomes more interesting. For instance, in this case, you can have exponential complexity here, right? And if you look at this formally, if you let this k become 2 is the critical value, then this pathology or interesting phenomenon does not happen. This is what Lenka was saying, right? If you take this k a bit less than 2, then this question of the weakness of the signal at the equator is no longer a problem. You can't escape the equator.
So
this is a class in which you find phase retrieval and all this kind of thing.
So you have more questions?
Statement that complexity doesn't count anything can be solved in the sense that
in the sense that I agree that if you use a thermal Langevin, the entropy counts. But if you use zero temperature dynamics, the entropy shouldn't.
No, wrong.
No, it's based on the attraction. The entropy in the sense of size of the base of attraction.
I'm sorry?
It's the size of the base of attraction.
So if I do something at zero temperature, I get stuck in the equator because of the many metastable states, not because of an entropic effect.
No, of course.
There are two effects.
Yeah.
The many metastable states and the entropy of the equator. Entropy. Depending on the temperature,
the weakness of the signal. That's the important thing.
That's okay. Yeah.
I think that thinking in terms of entropy or landscape here is not the simplest way. I think that the simplest calculation
one can do is really two lines. You would go at 1 over square root of n from the equator, compute what is the gradient, compute the mean of the gradient that is towards North Pole, and compare it with variance. If you are below n to the k minus 2 over 2, the variance beats the... So it's not entropy as basin in attraction, it's really the entropy.
When I mentioned entropy, here is just the mass of the equator, even with no roughness of the landscape. So
if you look at what is the gradient, it has a lot of variance, and the variance, so it doesn't point in the right direction.
So just a comment about hoping that SGD would help here. So first of all, I mean, SGD, the usual form of SGD when you sample just saves you maybe time per iteration, but I don't think that there's anything substantiating that helps us escape. It is true that perturbed SGD, so adding some randomness helps in some cases, but there's only cases which are very delicate, like all these, like somebody said, cooked up cases where you have saddle points which are super delicate, and then if you just perturb them a bit, you escape them, which doesn't seem to be the case here, because once you're below the threshold, you have these really deep holes. I mean, maybe Yushen can comment more on that, but
that's not a problem of deep holes. You don't see any deep holes here. You don't see them in finite time. So that's not a problem of escaping deep holes. You never get into a deep hole, and you never, and it's not a problem of escaping them. It's a problem.
Don't you have around the equator here? You would have lots.
Yeah, but that's not the thing that are blocking you. Eventually, if you stay long enough.
Yeah, but you don't have any chance of escaping that band. I mean, just adding perturbation.
But the fact is that they study dynamics for times of order, number of iterations of order n, right? So it's very simple. I mean, so you have the gradient. If you do one step, it's obvious that you will not, it's the one-line calculation that you will not go in the right direction, because the gradient has a lot of variance, and it's very, very small average on the equator. So that's it. Now, if you do order n step, you can hope that somehow, if these were IAD gradients that you probe, you cannot accumulate any information still, right? Now, either correlation matters, but but obviously, as you are saying, you don't expect that if you perturb gradient descent, then. Yeah, even if you do n, I don't expect it to see. Nobody proved it, but this is. Yeah. This is stuff for which one can.
You know, in fact, we kind of see what happens, because either you escape this band around the equator rather quickly, or you stay there. And if you stay there, we prove that you stay in at least a stretch exponential time. So, and then of course the holes play a role. Once you're trapped by the equator, then.
So let's call it a discussion. That was a nice one. And great.